Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Joshua Cohen's new novel, Book of Numbers, is narrated by a fictional Joshua Cohen, also a writer, whose misfortune is to have written a book with a publication date of September 11th, 2001. The 600-page novel deals with topics such as the Holocaust, Jews, Hindus, Buddhists, Arabs, government surveillance of email, writers, their editors, agents, and parents, and certainly much more. Joshua Cohen has written novels, short fiction, and nonfiction. He's a critic for Harper's Magazine, and it's a pleasure to welcome Joshua Cohen to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
What brought you down this road of wanting to explore the internet and explore our culture in the way that you did?
I think certainly it was generational. I was born in 1980, so I was still very much in school, the textbook generation. And then computers came into my life, came into the life of my generation, really in our early teens, which is a fairly impressionistic time to be, encountering anything, let alone, the dominant technology that, will shape really the rest of our lives, our employability, our relationships. And so it felt that I was lucky and unlucky enough to be living in a very transitional time. And then on top of that, I was living in my early 20s in Eastern Europe and a little bit in Russia and Ukraine. And that was the time when the internet really took off, got out of those walled gardens of, let's say, AOL, and really came about, going around the web. And I was abroad for 5.5, 6 years, and coming back to the States, it was as if I was coming back, not just another country, but another country deep into a future that I hadn't ever imagined.
So when did it start to take form as to how you were going to tell the story in a very interesting and even peculiar way?
I think there are many peculiar things about this book. I think that maybe you're referring to some of the biblical structure of it.
Well,
the title reference?
The biblical structure, certainly. The fact that you are in it, your name. The idea that the mogul of the book is the principal. And there's a lot going on.
Yeah, I mean, the doubling was really a childhood fascination with double stories, with, Dostoevsky's The Double, with Poe's stories, with E.T.A. Hoffman's stories, with Nabokov's Despair. This idea of the double, especially the double in a sort of Prince and the Pauper way, in the sense of I have one Joshua Cohen who is a, failed novelist, who is essentially broke, and then I have another character, Joshua Cohen, who is the 14th richest man in the world and the founder of a company called Tetration, which is the world's largest technology company. It began by basically perfecting the search engine, as we know it, or as the world in the book knows it, and then goes on to make hardware like smartphones and so on. So the approach to writing my name into it was not only to bring a double story into the present, bring a double story into the future, because the technology has made all of our lives double stories. We all find our doppelgangers online, people named the same as us who live lives that maybe are the lives we would like to live, but most of the time are lives that we can be pleased that we don't live, but we are, sort of chagrined when we are mistaken for them. Part of it was just seeing other Joshua Cohens out there. My parents gave me this very boring name, what I find to be a very boring name, and suddenly I see that all of these other people have it, and that, instead of a name being about the quality of the person, we're in a place now where these names are quantified. Who is the Joshua Cohen who's winning the internet, in a sense? That was the doubles approach. The other approach was very much from my earlier education, which was a traditional Jewish education, and being fascinated by the biblical book of Numbers, right? The fourth book of the Bible,
right,
which is essentially the breakdown of all biblical narrative, right? The Bible begins with these incredible stories. I mean, how could there be a better story than the creation of light by just saying the word light? And then you have these incredible stories of Eden and the Tower of Babel and so on and so forth, through the Exodus from Egypt. And after these deep myths, we end up with a generation that's freed from, slavery in Egypt and wanders for 40 years in the desert, not allowed to inherit the promised land that God said they would. because, you know, they are an enslaved generation and they don't know how to have, let's say, their own kingdom. And so they wander for 40 years and an entire generation dies out so that the young, new, shiny generation can inherit the future. You know, the generation that did not know hardship could inherit the future. And at that point, you know, the rest of the Bible essentially, through the last book, is essentially a reiteration of laws. You know, narrative stops. Those 40 years in the desert, that shift, that end of narrative, really struck me as being analogous to our situation today, where there is a deep generational divide. And there is sort of a 40 years in the desert of Silicon Valley that separates the people who are beholden to the page from the people who will, you know, inherit the screen.
This novel follows this mysterious tax billionaire that I talked about called Principal. What is Principal, in your idea, in your opinion, what is he searching for? What is he looking for?
In my mind, you know, this second Joshua Cohen, who was referred to as Principal, so the reader doesn't totally hate me, is a, what he's searching for is not so easy of a question, only because his entire life is built around search. He is the innovator and in essentially the resident genius of search, how we search for everything, you know, on search engines, on tetration.com, which is the company in the book. And so in a sense, you know, in his professional life, what he's searching for is actually the most perfect way to search for something, which for him has always been metricized. There's always a numerical value to it. You know, what is the most popular? What is, you know, the most visited? What are these, you know, ways in which we can quantify experiences and then present them to a public? And then at the same time, outside of his professional life, in that small sliver he allows himself, he knows that that isn't enough. And he develops, you know, certain religious or spiritual hungers. He develops a sort of mystical relationship with the idea of search. So if he's searching for something, in a single answer, is he's looking for a way out of this quantification.
This book is almost 600 pages. How aware were you of where you wanted to go totally, and how much of it was almost like a jazz riff as you were writing?
Oh, I mean, I think a lot of this, all of it was planned out. To my mind, I mean, some of the greatest jazz is, you know, it's improvised on the surface, right? But it's rooted in deep chord structures that, you know, keep everyone together. This book is very much based on the biblical book of Numbers. Characters are drawn from that. Situations are drawn from that. It is very tightly organized, you know, along certain, you know, technical principles of like algorithmic writing, of certain principles of prosody that come from underlying ideas of binary notation. I mean, there are a lot of technical things that will bore absolutely everyone, but no, it was deeply planned, but it was planned so that you wouldn't notice, in a sense. And I wanted the surface to be very much this freewheeling and kind of wild conversation between two men who happen to share the same name, who come from completely, happen to share the same age, who come from completely different circumstances otherwise. And one man is hired to, you know, ghostwrite the other man's memoirs and kind of trail him along on this chase throughout the world, you know, visiting kind of their headquarters throughout the world, sort of jockeying for not only the reader's attention, but the real estate of the book to be the true and only original Joshua Cohen.
There is writing that takes you into different directions. There are moments where you don't know as the reader doesn't know what's going on, and then you have to kind of fill it in and figure it out, but you're entranced by it because it's great writing, and it's fascinating to look at, not only to read and understand. Which I guess is a long way of asking the question is, do you care that perhaps the reader may not always be completely sure of what they're experiencing at that moment?
Oh, I mean, I do care to be understood, yes. And I don't think the book is more difficult than many other books that just, you know, that have the benefit of long history and a long, you know, critical body of work around them that people read all the time. But it's certainly easier than you know, Ulysses. But you know, my central hope, let's say, was to write a book that contained the energy of the internet And if the energy includes the incoherence, if it includes the obscenity, if it includes the boredom, then, you know, then so be it. But spending a number of years writing a book about the internet, I mean, it's sort of like, you know, it's a mouse writing about a cat, right? It's the thing that will destroy you, that will swallow you. And so spending years doing this and not only trying to keep up with things as they change, but of course trying to surpass it, that seemed to me to be, at the very beginning of writing, the wrong way to do it. Instead, my hope was to put down on the page and communicate some of the feeling of being online, some of the feeling of searching, some of those, you know, connections among pages that aren't necessarily apparent. I mean, if we went into my search history, right, or your search history on your computer, it would be the work of a schizophrenic. The thing that connects all of these pages, the thing that connects the restaurant you looked up from, you know, the question like, is this a rash, to like, you know, looking at like, you know, the home of a ex-girlfriend many, many years ago, talking about myself now, you know, the connections are within us. They're not in the search history. They're within the mind that selects. And so I wanted to also put down that mind on paper to show that not only can I put that variety into a book, and not only can the book communicate some of that spirit, but in fact there would be an attempt at showing the full unifying principle of a mind acting behind these choices.
What do you think of the mind of the reader, in the sense of, what do you make of just the overall interest in our technological age of this act of reading and wanting to read a long story?
I've never bought this question of bibliothanatos, right? The death of the book. It's never made sense to me. I mean, people are reading and writing more than ever before. They're spending more time with text. And not only that, but they're spending more time interpreting and commenting on text than ever before. And while we can make jokes about the quality of most commentary online, the truth is there is some wonderful commentary. And I truly think that not just the practice of reading, but the practice of really of hermeneutics, of interpretation, of critical reading has in a sense never been healthier. I'm not a declinist, I'm not a technophobe. To be against technology in my mind would be to be against the human, because, you know, all technology is a tool for, you know, disseminating who we are as widely as possible. And obviously there are downsides to it. But when people speak about, you know, the effect of the internet or technology on the book, the use of those words, they sound like abstract nouns that are just put there as boogeymen, as opposed to externalizations of another urge on the part of the human to express themselves and to communicate.
That reliance that you have in the novel on tech talk and this lingo, I assume, is partially necessary to tell the story that you want about this tech world, but also almost an education to the reader as to what this world is.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I'm very attracted to not necessarily the jargon aspect of it, but shop talk, any shop talk I love. You know, any person who knows how to, the names of parts of shoes, you know, the names of different, you know, architectural elements, the lore of the trade, the holiness or fetishistic value, let's say, of a trade exists in its vocabulary, you know, and that holds true for butchers when they talk about cuts of meat, you know, it holds true for the law, it holds true for medicine, and it holds true for technology. And so it just so happens that tech was not only, you know, the trade of our time, the trade that seems the most, you know, rapidly changing or at least pressing for comment, but it was also the trade I was interested in sort of reshaping, right? Because it's a relatively new type of shop talk. And it's in many ways the great, you know, honor as a writer of this generation to be able to sort of play whatever small role in helping kind of shape a language.
How trustworthy or untrustworthy do you want the narrator and narrators to be?
I mean, certainly the first Josh Cohen, the failed ghostwriter, is a deeply untrustworthy, you know, narrator, a deeply unreliable narrator. And that was the sort of point. I wanted to have someone talk and talk and talk and talk, be somewhat of an odious character, but talk so much, put so much on the page that the reader would think, oh, you know, this person is telling me everything. They're being so frank. They're being so, you know, they're talking about embarrassing, shameful things, right? But then to drop the bottom out of it, in a sense, later on, and actually have another character, his ex-wife, come in and become a narrator herself and have her own section and say some things about this character that he'd been withholding. With me, it's not necessarily what's reliable, what's unreliable. It's the idea of the curation of self, how we present ourselves in the world. And obviously that, you know, self-presentation, which, you know, the history of self-presentation is the history of the world, right? I mean, people have, there have always been, you know, certain formalities, certain ways of addressing your elders versus addressing your peers. I mean, certain languages have that built into the grammar, right? And German certainly does. But this sense of presenting yourself to the world becomes endangered with technology because, you know, all it takes is, you know, someone to press a button and shatter your immaculately curated self, where you've presented yourself to the world without any of the flaws we all have, without any of the bad decisions and regrets, you know, that we would withhold from conversation. But here anyone can present your flaws to the world. We're constantly vulnerable to other people's narratives. And so I don't really think about it then as necessarily untrustworthy. I think about it as vulnerable to having our self-presentations punctured.
My understanding is that the research for this novel took almost a decade.
Yeah, a long time.
What is it that you wanted to have at your disposal in the actual writing? Who did you want to talk to? What information did you want?
I mean, I think that technology, which is so full of the future, let's say, really lacks a good history or historiography. It's such recent history. The 40 years of wandering in the desert from the Book of Numbers, I sort of grafted onto 1971 to 2011. 1971 being, you know, they mentioned the semiconductor, the kind of birth of personal computing at Xerox PARC right near Stanford, in Menlo Park, California, and Palo Alto, and then 2011 being sort of, you know, right in the middle, in the sweet spot of the leak era, right, between Julian Assange and Edward Snowden. For me, a lot of that research was directed at, you know, the early 70s and what was going on at Xerox PARC, you know, because really, you know, there were some fundamental ideas that shaped the way, you know, computing exists today commercially. And there were also some completely crazy ideas that would, you know, make the present a little bit probably better than it is. At the same time, it's fascinating to me how, you know, the American counterculture of the 60s and early 70s, which, you know, somewhat of my generation is both legendary and resented, right? Because it seemed like a deeply authentic experience that our parents had, but that was somewhat foreclosed to people growing up in the 90s, which seemed like safe and banal by comparison. But the way in which the American, you know, counterculture really fed into Silicon Valley as we know it today. So a lot of the research was talking to people who had worked at Xerox PARC, reading books about that, you know, about that era, talking to some people who knew Ken Kesey when he lived on Perry Lane, mm-hmm. Essentially, you know, adjacent to Xerox PARC. And then on the other side, it was a lot of, you know, theoretical and technical reading. I taught myself how to code in a few languages. I took coding classes. I bothered people who will remain nameless who work at a number of companies and stole horrifying personal details from them. But, you know, some of them don't read, so they'll never find out.
As you're writing this, though, and you mention Julian Assange and Edward Snowden, but the whole Edward Snowden story breaks as you're writing this.
Yeah, it does.
Because much of what you're writing about and even not predicting exactly, but looking at and exploring is sort of unfolding as you're writing.
Well, this is a conversation I've had a lot with a very good friend of mine, one of my best friends, Ben Weisner, who's a lawyer for the ACLU and is Snowden's legal representation. He was formerly working on the Guantanamo project for the ACLU. And while I was writing this book, he was put in touch with Snowden and has become his legal advisor. Obviously, there are many things, you know, that he can't and won't say to me, and there are obviously many things I can't and won't ask him out of respect. But it was always my sense that Snowden is a hero, but as a novelist, I think that he's a bit of a Boy Scout for me. He's a very, very truly upright person, it seems, and would so make a very boring character in fiction. Assange, however, has sort of the darkness that I require from a novel, and has some of the resentment and rage that fuels literature. And so characterologically, I was much more drawn to an Assange-type model. But that aside, the information that came out in the Snowden leaks, they confirmed, you know, many things that I not just myself, but many people had, you know, had thought. I mean, that 70s generation of the paranoid novelists, right, like the Thomas Pynchons or even, you know, Don DeLillo, right? These were people who were essentially, I mean, wonderful, really the great American novelists, I think, since Faulkner, the two of them. But they're really trying to lay out these systems by which the world operates. And so there are these series of linked conspiracies, these suspicions, and they're constantly wondering, you know, is this true? Could this be true? And, you know, that seems particularly Nixonian to me. I felt like my generation grows up accepting the fact that all these things are true. The question is, how do we live with them, right? How do we live with a world in which, you know, we have no more paranoia, or the only thing we're paranoid about is that we might not have anything to be paranoid about? And so in a sense, you know, to extrapolate from this sort of, you know, surveillance culture that had been limbed not just by, you know, those two novelists, but by generations of science fiction writers, right, and genre writers, if you want to call them that, it was not surprising, you know, to me, you know, our searches are being tracked in real time. It was not surprising to me that our telephone data was being sucked up in a dragnet. It was not surprising to me that companies, you know, without NSA fiat are going to put, you know, cameras in our refrigerators and cameras in our washers and dryers. These things are familiar to anyone who skipped school and read some pulp.
What do you hope ultimately people get out of the novel in a sense of maybe even a realization of the internet and the tech world that we live in?
I hope that people, I mean, people, it's so abstract to say what someone I don't know would get out of it. I mean, it was my hope in writing the book, right? It was my hope in writing the book that in fact, it would be a rediscovery then of this sort of intimacy, the lack of which makes me wary of answering the question. What I mean by that is there is this sense, especially among people who read, and especially among people who read fiction, that their world is removed, if not antithetical, to technology. It's my hope that in the energy that I tried to put into these pages, and in the frenetic nature of its invention, that they get a sense that sort of all life is up for being narratized. You know, all life is made up of language and can be manipulated through language. And that, in fact, by reading fiction, right, and by understanding how to read fiction, they're not walling themselves off from the world. Instead, they're learning how to name and, you know, and define the things around them, right? The person who knows how to read fiction, I think, knows how to order and interpret the world. I deeply dislike the word empowerment, right? So, you know, that to me is a baby boomer devalued word. But there has to be some sense of returning to the reader and the reading public and the reading imagination, something of the grandeur of the word and some of the awareness of the power the word has to shape the world around us, that the words you use condition the way we think about things, which is why, again, I mean, I can go back to answering a question before, which is why it's kind of written in the language that it's written. It's showing that everything is essentially being novelized, right? We're living in this fiction that is being created for us by these companies. So why can't the people who really know how to write fiction and the people who really know how to read fiction understand that their game is being played now by other people and participate instead in this project of reclamation and take the word back and take these naming concepts back and these defining concepts back for the book, you know, or for the soul?
The new book is Book of Numbers. It is published by Random House. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about the show. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening.
for the book show. I'm Joe Donahue.